You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Time named Vladimir Putin its 2007 Person of the Year, the magazine called him the Tsar of the New Russia. But even the most powerful individuals are defined by their aides, allies, and advisors, and they're also defined by those who oppose them. Who has helped to define Vladimir Putin? Russian journalist Mikhail Ziger interviewed dozens of people in and around his country's government for his new book called All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin. It's published by Public Affairs. I'm very pleased it has brought Mikhail Ziger to our show today. Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Before we discuss the people around Putin, tensions are growing between the United States and Russia over Syria. At the same time, we're learning about Trump campaign ties to Russia. How are events defining Vladimir Putin?
I really think that these days, as Russia is dominating the news agenda in American media, a lot of things that we hear now is exaggeration.
Well, U.S. shot down a Syrian warplane last weekend.
Yeah.
In response, Russia then suggested it might target U.S. aircraft. A Russian plane buzzed the U.S. plane. How far could tensions between the U.S. and Russia escalate?
You know, I don't think that Vladimir Putin really cares about Syria. What's happening there is just a part of his attempt to be internationally respected, to be recognized. Because when he started that operation in Syria in 2015, that time he was an outcast. He was absolutely isolated. He felt that the only topic that could be discussed with him was Ukrainian crisis, and that was fall 2015 when he attended the G20 summit in Brisbane, and he found himself sitting alone at the table during the working lunch, and none of the global leaders wanted to share a table with him. So the idea of interfering into Syrian crisis was his attempt to bring him back to the international negotiation.
Is this a headline story in Russia?
Syria? Actually, it's really not so important for Russian media. It's that's a topic, but that's like topic number 25.
What about
relationships between Russia and the United States? Trump and Putin is the topic, and that's everyone is talking about.
And what do Russians think about how the Trump administration is dealing with Russia?
Russians are not that homogenic as they seem to be portrayed by the foreign media, but normally. Let's speak about Putin himself and Putin's inner circle and Russian bureaucrats who that bureaucratic army that I describe in my book, and I call them all the Kremlin's men. I think they are happy. I think the current image of Putin as the most powerful man in the world or the most scary man in the world pleases them a lot. That's what he has always wanted to achieve. That's that level of recognition he has been dreaming for decades, and he's happy with that. What's wrong with being number one bad guy? Okay.
Well, the Washington Post today reveals that the U.S. has definite proof that Putin was behind the cyber attacks on the U.S. election, although he has denied it continually. Does the Russian people think that some of their countrymen, whether it was Putin directly or people who were freelancing, meddled in the U.S. election?
I think no one has any doubts about that. If you ask me personally, it's strange, but I believe Putin. I really think that he was not the man to order to start that hacking. I really think that Russian intelligence is not that effective, and there are no IT professionals working for the government itself, but probably the private company closely affiliated with FSB or SVR.
The French wouldn't agree. The Estonians wouldn't agree. The Ukrainians wouldn't agree. They feel that Putin has been orchestrating campaign, getting into their electoral politics for the past few years.
You know, I'm not fan of Vladimir Putin. I'm not supporter of Vladimir Putin. I've been running the only independent news TV channel in Russia for many years, but I think that the level of idealization or demonization of Vladimir Putin is really high. He's portrayed as a very clever man, as a mastermind of the global conspiracy, and I really think that that's an exaggeration.
Well, Masha Gessen describes him as a poorly educated buffoon. That's the other side.
You know, Russian leadership is very chaotic. None of them are strategic players. They don't have a strategy. They are tactical players. They usually respond to the new circumstances, but they don't have a clear strategy because they have to change their plans every time. So I do not believe in any sophisticated plan. They want to cause chaos in different countries in different elections. But you know, that's not that sophisticated as it's usually supposed to be.
Was the Time magazine description in 2007 justified? Has Vladimir Putin become a kind of a czar?
You know, that he has gone through a long way. From the beginning of his presidency, in the beginning of his first presidential term, he was quite a different man than he is now.
He presented himself as a reformer.
Yes, and his inner circle was much more reformist and much more liberal than he is now. And actually, yes, in the beginning, he really wanted to make friends with the United States, with United Kingdom. Tony Blair was his role model. He wanted to be treated as an equal partner by George W. Bush. Even more, he wanted Russia to be invited to NATO, although now it seems completely impossible. So I wouldn't say that in the beginning he thought of himself as a czar, and he wasn't he didn't seem to be a czar in Russian society. On the contrary, Boris Yeltsin was usually described as a great Russian old czar. So Putin, rather young, rather energetic Putin in the beginning, looked quite differently. And probably I think that cover photo of the Time magazine was the first step of him being portrayed as a czar. But as for now, yes, now he thinks of himself as a kind of an emperor. Yeah, he thinks that he's the most experienced, the most successful political leader in the world.
You argue that Putin went from Vlad the Lionheart to Vlad the Magnificent to what he is now, Vlad the Terrible.
Yeah, these are the names of the chapters of now, my book. Yeah, the transformation is really important, I think.
Well, when he came to power, did he try to rally allies who would support him in his efforts to reform the situation? And there has been reform, but it hasn't necessarily been the reform that people imagined at the time.
Actually, the reforms were really impressive in the beginning. Unfortunately, they did not last long, because unfortunately, the oil prices rocketed, and by the end of I would say 2002, he found that all those painful, unpopular reforms were not needed. Russia was flourishing anyway. The oil prices got him that popularity he could not dream of. So he's
with the general public. Hasn't it been described as a kleptocracy where only people at the top The oligarchs and the people in the government are really benefiting from the oil prices?
Not only. You know, the gap is huge. Yeah, the difference between the lifestyle of the oligarchs and the Russian people is really dramatic. But the first decade of this century was really prosperous. During the previous decade, Russian people have reached that living standards they have never seen before. That was really the most prosperous, the most wealthy decade in Russian history. And normally, the majority of Russian population really felt rather satisfied with their living conditions.
Were there people around Vladimir Putin who used his rise to power?
Say it again, sorry.
Were there people who used it for their own benefit?
Yeah.
The Kremlin's men that you write about in your title?
Probably the most important factor of his presidency, because he really depends on the people surrounding him. And that's very important part of my book, that that Putin didn't want to be reelected for the second term. After his first presidential term, he wanted to resign and to leave it. And he was nearly made. His inner circle, his friends, and his the ministers of his government made him stay, because they needed him as a guarantee that they survive, they keep their positions, they keep their property, they keep their money. Because and he's still now the only guarantee for that group of people, and they want him to stay in power forever.
Even when Medvedev became president, he really was obviously the person who was running things.
No, not exactly. That was complicated. Yeah, Medvedev was not the man to be considered to be president, but step by step he was trying to become more self-confident. And probably, if only Medvedev ran for the second presidential term, he could have become the real president. And that was a danger for a lot of people who considered themselves to be Putin's guard. And that's why none of them wanted Medvedev to stay in power, because Medvedev is not a democratic leader of new Russia, but he was as a president much more efficient, much more reformer, he was a champion of transparency.
But recent protests have been against the fact that he has enriched himself.
That's funny. That's if we're speaking about the current protests that happened in March and then again in June. That's funny. That's these are the protests of the young generation, mostly teenagers, school children who are protesting against the corruption, and the leader of those protests is probably the only politician in Russia whose name is Alexei Navalny.
Who's in jail right now?
He is in jail for 3 weeks, and he's going to be out rather soon. And that's really interesting that he has chosen Dmitry Medvedev as the target of his investigation. Although that's obvious that Medvedev is not the most corrupted politician. He is not the symbol of Russian corruption, unlike many people, many heroes of my book, unlike many people of Putin's in a circle. He's no oligarch. He's not Dr. Evil of Russia. But that's funny that he is, as the prime minister and former president, he's probably the only politician whom all those school kids know. They simply don't know anybody else, and they wouldn't dare probably to protest against Putin himself, because Putin is associated with rather effective foreign policy. he's kind of in charge of foreign policy, and Medvedev, as prime minister, is in charge of domestic policy and economic situation, and everyone is mad with domestic policy and economy. That's why occasionally Medvedev became the target of those protests.
Mr. Putin is now 64. How long could he remain in power? Or you have a sense of how, whether he, even though he didn't want to in the past, now
he wants.
Does want to stay
now
there.
Unfortunately, he believes that he's the one and only man who can save Russia from being ruined, from American conspiracy. And next year, he's going probably to be reelected for the next presidential 6 years term. According to the Constitution, that's going to be his last presidential term. So he cannot be legally reelected after 2024. But yeah, unfortunately, he really believes that there is no one who can rule country better than him. And that's the biggest factor of Russian instability, because we don't have any transition mechanism.
My guest is Mikhail Zhiga, the former editor-in-chief of the only independent TV station in Russia, TV Rain, Dozhd. Previously, he worked for Newsweek Russia and the business daily Kommersant. He has written a book called All the Kremlin's Men. It is published by Public Affairs, and we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Mikhail Zhiga, who has written a book called All the Kremlin's Men, Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin, published by Public Affairs. Isn't this the first time you're in the United States?
No. I've been here many times.
But I understand it was hard for you to get out this time. Not true?
No.
Okay.
I've got visa, and we don't need exit visas so far in Russia, so that was quite easy.
It's my sense that a major concern of the people in the Kremlin is the expansion of NATO and the feeling that Russia is being encircled.
You know, that for decades that was one of the greatest irrational fears of Kremlin elite. Probably that was the biggest reason for Crimea annexation, because they were really afraid of Ukraine joining NATO and NATO fleet coming to the port of Sevastopol, that is considered by many Russians to be the Russian port. So that was probably the real starting point of that plan.
Was Putin able to use NATO expansion to build support among potential allies or among Russians in general?
You know, I think that NATO expansion is used by Russian propaganda as a cliche, but that's not really important for the majority of Russian people.
You list over 100 people among the characters in Vladimir Putin's court. Is he managing or coordinating all of their efforts, or is the Kremlin more divided or chaotic? Is there dissent and criticism allowed within this group?
It is chaotic. There are no clans inside Kremlin, because they are constantly fighting each other, everybody against everybody. But at the same time, they are mutually dependent. Putin depends on them as much as they depend on him. But at the same time, he finds time to watch and to read the transcripts of their conversations. Every one of them know that they are listened to, that every conversation, every private talk they have is being taped, and then Big Brother Vladimir finds time to read it.
And no matter how powerful, some of they have to watch out. A few of the richest oligarchs have wound up in prison, like Khodorkovsky.
Only one, actually.
He was the one?
He was the one, and actually that was an example that was enough for all other oligarchs to understand who is the boss. And actually, that's probably the reason for for them to know that they are not real owners of the property they seem to own. They're watching it. And
so the state still owns the property to some degree. Is that a continuation of the Soviet concept?
That's absolutely new model. That's not state. Legally, they are the owners. But as some of them couple of times said during the interviews to Wall, I remember at least one interview of one Russian oligarch to Wall Street Journal and another interview to Financial Times. They say that I can give everything I own any moment when the state wants me to give it. So actually, when Vladimir Putin is described to be a billionaire, one of the richest men in the world, I think he does not need all those accounts, all that wealth, because he knows that anytime he can ask anybody to pay for anything, and they will do that.
A number of countries, including the United States, have imposed sanctions against individuals, businesses, and officials from Russia. How have people in the Putin regime reacted to that?
I think they were very sad because of the fact that they cannot use their villas in southern France and have to move to their villas in Seychelles Islands. But they were sad for a moment and then relaxed.
There's a disagreement between Republicans in Congress and the president over whether to expand the sanctions. I'm wondering whether we see similar things inside the Kremlin.
You know, I don't think that.
I mean, does Putin manage divisions within his circle of friends?
No, I don't think that those sanctions were a blow to that Russian elite. The oil prices became a real factor of Russian economy, and the crisis that we're having now, actually not that horrible crisis that as it was expected in 2014, but still the crisis is caused by the oil prices, not by the sanctions.
So
that's not that.
So the economy is the big issue right now. Is that what's dividing people in the inner circle? What to do about the economy?
You know. I think they are rather relaxed. They don't have a plan what to do with Russian economy if only the oil prices do not come back to that normal level. But they still hope. They hope that it's going to be okay in 2014. And actually, the terrible crisis didn't happen. They have different plans. For example, his ex finance minister Alexei Kudrin, who's rumored to be probably the next prime minister, is preparing a plan of reforms to save Russian economy in case the crisis becomes worse. But
Russia is a huge country, and it's surprising that it would rely so much on oil. I mean, oil, the countries that rely mostly on oil as the basis of their economy are much smaller. Russia could have a lot more diversity in its economy. Why hasn't it pushed for that?
You know, that's not a question for me. That's probably a question for Vladimir Putin.
They were saying that when sanctions were being put on Russia and you couldn't get butter from France or whatever, that was probably finally going to help
But that were not sanctions. That were self-imposed sanctions. Mm-hmm. That was Putin's initiative to impose sanctions on European producers of food.
So are more people making butter and other foods?
Actually, the agriculture is way much better than it used to be. It helped, actually, Russian agriculture producers.
My guest is Mikhail Zygar, spelled Z-Y-G-A-R. His book, All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin, is published by Public Affairs. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How have attitudes towards dissent or criticism changed since Putin came to power? 60 Minutes, for example, interviewed Vladimir Kara-Murza, a journalist and pro-democracy activist, and then he was allegedly poisoned for speaking out against the Kremlin. Several of Putin's critics have died under suspicious circumstances.
You know, that's a delicate question. I do not... there are several suspicious cases, including the murder of Alexander Litvinenko, ex-KGB officer who died in London about 10 years ago.
It was the death of a woman journalist who had covered Chechnya?
Yes. That's really, I would say that's much more important because Chechnya is the most, is one of the most big problems in Russia. That's little republic in North Caucasus that is supposed to be part of Russia. Unfortunately, it's out of control of the central government, and its leader, Ramzan Kadyrov, the president of Chechen Republic, is a very authoritarian leader. And actually, Chechnya is the most brutal dictatorship in Europe. It could be compared to, I don't know, North Korea, but that's Muslim North Korea in Europe that is legally a part of Russia, but normally is not. Most of the most terrible murders that happened during the previous decades in Russia are normally connected with Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov or his inner circle. So Anna Politkovskaya, the journalist you mentioned, was murdered after she wrote numerous investigations about Kadyrov. Boris Nemtsov, ex-Russian vice prime minister and leader of Russia, one of leaders of Russian opposition, was murdered by Chechens after he criticized Ramzan Kadyrov. So no doubts that Chechnya is a problem, and that a lot of very suspicious murders are happening because of that.
Now, we have very little time left, but you were editor-in-chief of the independent news TV channel Dozhd, which... How did the Russian government treat your channel, especially when you covered the protests in 2011?
Yeah, actually, I quit Dozhd a couple of years ago, but before that, we were very important media. And until the TV channel was nearly shut down in 2014. It was very successful, especially during the street protests of 2011-2012, when we were almost the only TV channel to cover all those protest rallies. And we had like 20 million people watching us daily. That was a huge success, actually. And we didn't have problems for like first 5 years of our existence.
Didn't people protest when you were shut down?
They did more. People supported. The TV channel wasn't shut down. You know, that was very informal operation. People from Kremlin called the owners of the cable and satellite providers and demanded them to switch the TV channel off. But thanks to the support of the audience, the TV channel could raise as much as $2 million and to survive.
You have another book coming out in November, The Empire Must Die, Russia's Revolutionary Collapse, 1900-1917.
Absolutely.
I'm going to invite you back now to talk about that.
I would be happy to visit you.
And thank you so much for coming by today to
talk
about All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin. It is published by Public Affairs, and its author is Mikhail Zygar. If you're looking for it in the bookstore, it's Zygar. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.